All right, hold on.
I was saying, I gotta turn down my earbuds because they're like, that shit's at fucking like 10.
No, well, also, I had things going to the wrong thing. There we go. Let's try that again. That's better. What is up? Welcome to Beer Field. I am your host, Chris Hopper, at Beer Field Hop with two P's, as always, joined by, always lately, at Reminder underscore FFP.
What is up?
Dan cannot be with us tonight. Some bad storms ran through his neck of the woods, so he is without internet. A lot of Central Illinois without power. No confirmed tornadoes or injuries or anything like that, but it's really hot and a lot of people without AC and stuff. So, you know, thoughts with them is they try to recover that shit. But we weren't here last week, so we're still going to give you a show. We're going to go over some of the latest news, coach speak, some of, you know, latest stuff to come out. We'll talk that for a little bit, and then we'll go ahead and we'll jump into some draft strategies. We're going to do a dynasty startup. I really want all three of us here for that. Just because it makes it a little bit more diverse and fun. So as far as picks and things go, the more people that we have. So we're going to flip over and do some strategy and things. And, you know, we'll try to get that in. Dynasty Startup drafted next week. At Beerfield on Twitter, Beerfield Podcast on YouTube, if you want to follow along there. So without further ado, make sure things are going here. Dan normally watches YouTube and stuff, and I am
not. I'm working on it right now.
Okay, we're good. All right, let's go ahead and get into the beer portion of the show.
What's fueling Beer Fueled?
All right, I'll go ahead and kick us off. I have Surreal Brewing Company's Creatives IPA. This is a non-alcoholic beer. So no sugar, 8.5 carbs, 44 calories. This is IPA. They don't really go into what hops are used or anything like that. It is a female-owned brewery. So kind of cool there. They don't really go into a lot about the beer other than that they fermented it with, quote, ancient Norwegian kvike yeast, which, first off, I got corrected on this a while ago. Kvike actually means yeast. So yeast. Yeah. Yeast, because apparently kvike actually means yeast. But also what that yeast is, I just brewed a couple beers with it. There's several different strains of it. Anything from like clean, used to brew pseudo lagers. So lagers that you don't need the cool temperatures for, you know, things that have like a mango or a tropical fruit note. It's got some of the strains have like a really unique like twang to them that you can only get out of using kvike. The other calling card of them is they have a really broad fermentation range. And, you know, with it being Norwegian, you wouldn't think like super hot temperatures necessarily, but it really does well in super hot temperatures. So with kvike, you can go, you're usually, the low end is usually about 70 degrees. So for comparison, the high end on most ale yeast is 70 degrees. And lager yeast are somewhere below that, usually about 55, 60 on the high end. So with kvike, your low end is 70 degrees. Your high end, in a lot of cases, is upwards of 95 to 100 degrees. So like when I used it, I just threw it in the garage and let it go. And it's been 90 to 100 degrees here all week. So some different things that you can do with that yeast. They didn't go into what hops are used with this or anything like that. There's no you know, fancy descriptors or anything other than the use that they do. They say tropical aromas, West Coast hop finish. So, you know, I can assume kind of from there what they might have used, probably some sea hops and, you know, some Pacific Northwest hops. But in any event, this is Surreal Brewing Company's Creatives IPA. It's a juicy West Coast style IPA with no alcohol.
No alcohol. You've been more on the NA kick than anyone I've seen. Something I didn't expect to see.
Dan did it for a while, and I decided I would start trying it just to kind of mix in. So I basically, what I've been doing is rather than buying 2-4 packs of regular beer, I've been buying regular beer on top of my beer plus some NA, because I was grabbing, I had a situation where, like, I didn't feel like I was abusing it or anything like that, but like, I'd want something other than milk or water with dinner, right? But I don't necessarily want to drink a beer either, because, you know, I'm having alcohol at that point 5-6 nights a week. So, you know, kind of like filling that purpose, like a lot of people would soda or something like that.
Yeah, I do that too. Like, I like the only pops I drink are like sugar-free pops.
Yeah.
Or like ice. You ever have the ice?
Yeah, I've seen that stuff. Yeah.
Or water.
I haven't had it. Yeah. I've definitely seen it though. My boss loves it.
Yeah, it's very good.
And for these, they're typically lower carb, you know, usually less than 10 net carbs. They're typically lower calorie. Most of them are, you know, well under 100 calories per. So
nice.
And no artificial sweeteners or anything like that.
That's even better yet.
Yeah. And really, the way they get the alcohol out of them, there's a couple different ways to do it, but it's all like, it's not chemicals or anything like that. It's all relatively natural processes. There's a vacuum way to do it. You can do some things with the ingredients and how you use them, but it's all process based on how you get it out of it. There's nothing funky going on with them. But more in the review, I'll give you more on, you know, kind of what I've noticed with the NAs that I've been drinking and some of the, you know, trade-offs that you get by going to a non-alcoholic beer.
Well, here in the Detroit area, I've been stuck inside because of all the smoke that's coming down from Canada. So the beer I've been kind of going with is kind of my Mexican style beer because it's been so hot, like especially down in St. Louis there. So I have Brew Detroit's Cerveza Del Rey, which is a Mexican style lager.
Nice.
Yeah, so a nice homebrew Detroit, Michigan beer for me.
Nice. I've got some left-hand Vienna out there, and it's kind of a Vienna's a commonality between Vienna lagers and Mexican cervezas. So cool. Full review coming up. Let's go ahead and get into some of this latest stuff. We're going to get into some of the rumors that are flying around, you know, how much you want to buy into it or not. We'll be doing a little bit of this throughout the entire offseason. News is slow, so I talk a little bit as, you know, hype builds on players, whether we think you should buy into it or not. This is kind of an area that we've ignored the last several years. So starting off, Commanders offensive coordinator Eric Bieniemy said fifth round pick Chris Rodriguez has to prove himself on special teams. Okay, I don't really care about that. It's special teams. I didn't read the whole headline. But I will say this is not dissimilar to what we've seen them do with running backs in the past when they bring them in. This just seems to be a thing where they're not handing the rookies anything. That backfield's going to be crowded in Washington.
I don't know. I'm still all about the Antonio Gibson bandwagon. I can't get off it.
The cream rises to the top, and I think Gibson's the most dynamic one there, especially the most dynamic pass catcher if you're in any form of PPR leagues. The Brian Robinson stuff last year was a great story, but he never really took off as a rusher. Gibson has had some injury stuff, but he's been the most dynamic. I love Chris Rodriguez as between the tackle, but he's not going to hurt Gibson's pass catching ability.
No, he doesn't have that burst and speed that Gibson has.
He doesn't have the hands either.
No.
That's not what his calling card
is. He's a plotter back.
Yeah, he's a big banger. Can carry some people. Broncos at Cortland Sutton study of Michael Thomas's 2019 film this offseason. I think that there's something to read into here. And I think it's that as Sutton gets older, we're seeing him kind of end up in this, you know, Dez Bryant type of scenario where Sutton's calling card was athleticism, the ability to win jump balls, get a step on people downfield, big on the outside. He came in as kind of a raw receiver and was able to succeed doing that. But as these guys get older, you know, they kind of have to reinvent themselves as route runners. and be a little bit more nuanced. And Thomas was never that athletic outside guy. It's a good year to study. It's his 149 catch season, but I think, you know, you can read in here that the Broncos are trying to evolve Courtland Sutton.
Which makes sense.
I think it does. But, and I know he was a popular pick last year and burned a lot of people. Do you see him as being a, you know, late round value potentially this year?
You're talking about Sutton?
Yeah.
I don't see him as late round value, but I see him, the gap between him and Judy getting further and further. So
Tim Patrick?
Or, Sutton.
Oh, no. Sorry. The gap between him, not the guy.
Oh, yeah.
I misheard you.
So on Tim Patrick, I mean, like, to say like that, like, it could just be more of he's more of that better head that's in the wide receiver room than anything else. Like, it doesn't mean he's the best receiver on that team. It's just more of the better team player, maybe, who can kind of get everyone pieced together. But he'd be more like a late round flyer, yeah, that I'd be willing to take. Because, I mean, he was producing like low end wide receiver two, high end wide receiver three when he was healthy. So to still get that late, I'm guessing he's still probably like a 14th, 15th round pick right now. He'd definitely be worth it.
So I'm looking at FFCal. Let me pull up their PPR ADP because that's just what I normally use. And this is going to be weird because you're in the offseason, so take this for what it is. But in full PPR right now, Jerry Jeudy is a 6th round pick. Right between Lockett and Christian Kirk, which should change as we get closer to redraft season. Judy should go up. I'd expect those other two to fall off a little bit. Courtland Sutton is a 7th rounder behind Drake London, ahead of Christian Watson. And Tim Patrick is undrafted at the moment.
All right. So yeah. I mean, if like, it's, like, I'd say if like you have like a 20 roster spots, like a deep bench, he'd be definitely worth like that 18, 19th round pick then.
He's someone that, you know, even in, you know, your normal 16, 17 round draft. So when you get into rounds, you know, if he's available, call it round 10 or so, that, you know, I'm probably okay with it because, you know, I think that there is going to be, if Russell turns it around, there is going to be a second viable wide receiver in Denver. So then you get into,
and I think actually Wilson does turn around this year because, I mean, he turned around last two games.
And to give you an idea, the guys that are going late 9th, early 10th right now, that's where you get into the Pickens, George Pickens, Gabe Davis, Jacoby Myers, Dotson, Ridley, you know, Michael Thomas. So I think sitting in there with like Thomas and Thielen and those guys is probably actually about the tier you should be in. Former studs that have, you know, maybe a little bit left. Also on the Denver Broncos front, by the way, Tim Patrick, multiple people came out and said he's the best wide receiver in the wide receiver room right now. And I think that's smoke. Tim Patrick had always been productive before the injury, and I don't know that that's going to go anywhere, but he's careful buying into that. That's not a guy that's going to like burst onto the scene and suddenly be a superstar. He is going to be what he is. But, you know, Judy emerged late last year, doesn't have any game time with Russell Wilson. Just pump the brakes on that a little bit.
And like that's like I said earlier about Tim Patrick, about being the best wide receiver, he could be the best like motivator, you know. Locker, he's like that one that, yeah, the best locker room guy.
Decoy,
exactly,
teaching people. You don't have a lot of context around that.
He's the best veteran that's probably in that locker room for the wide receivers.
Patriots signed Devontae Parker to a 3-year extension worth $33 million. So this is right after they suggested he could be a cap casualty. $14 million in guaranteed money. So that's interesting because he's only got 793 yards over the last three seasons. He's not really caught on there. They didn't give him a boatload of money, but they gave him a solid amount of money to where, you know, they got a real offensive coordinator in there, right? If the offense can take a step, then this also might not be a bad wide receiver 3 or 4 to have around.
Yeah, but how many times has he, like, when was he ever a wide receiver three or four for you? You know, he had that one magical year, and then it's basically been like nothing.
Well, that's true, but I mean, you're going to have Juju there, which, you know, that's, he's been down the last couple of years. So, I mean, you're really kind of picking your guy. So what if you get one of them cheap?
He'd be like one of those first that you drop after week one. I can see it already.
Yeah, it's not. Yeah, and that's fine. It's just, it's not a deep wide receiver core, right? So,
no,
you know, you don't expect them to be high volume either. But, you know, on most teams, you expect somebody to be at least wide receiver four viable, right? Even the worst teams have somebody that can crack into that wide receiver four range. And, you know, yeah, your wide receiver threes and fours are going to be churn guys and guys you figure out. You know, this is also a receiving core that, you know, outside of Juju, it's Parker, Kendrick Bourne, Tyquan Thornton, Kayshon Boutte. It's nothing. So he's got a you're saying there's a chance. You're saying there's a chance is basically what that means. What else do we got? Looks like Dolphins offered a contract to Dalvin Cook. He has not accepted that. Colts kick returner Isaiah Rodgers is expected to receive a year-long suspension for his gambling efforts.
I think they did. I think him and someone else on the team also received a whole year. I think it was a couple hours. It was either yesterday or a couple hours ago.
He didn't get... So the only other suspension I saw was Cam Robinson, which is for PEDs. Jags tackle. I didn't see anybody else on the Colts.
Okay.
Indefinite suspension for betting on NFL games and was let go shortly after the penalty was handed down. I'm going to miss at least the 2023 season, could sit out longer. His teammate Rashad Berry was also let go by the team after he received an indefinite suspension. So,
all right. So that was the other player.
I don't know who Rashad Berry is. And then Cam Robinson, Jags tackle, was suspended for four games for PEDs. So Robinson's the most impactful suspension to come out of that run of suspensions from the league office, just because the Jags are not deep at O-line and he's hugely important to what they do and hugely important to Trevor Lawrence, and he's going to miss some time.
Yeah, it sucks.
Yeah, it does. Speaking of things that suck, former Patriots and Ravens quarterback Ryan Mallett passed away, 35 years old, drowned, got caught in a rip current beach accident. He's not been in the league since 2017, but still sad to see that happen to anyone. He was coaching high school in Arkansas.
That's so sad. And those rip currents always get you because, like, you see the tide coming in, and then what a rip current is that area that looks like it's actually like calm water.
Yep.
And that's the area you don't want to go in. So if you get pulled out, you want to swim
parallel to the beach.
Yeah, you want to go down a diagonal and try to get to it.
Yeah, don't try to swim directly back to shore. Swim or
side to side.
Swim side to side until you're out of it, and then you can swim in. But you don't want to fight it.
Nope, because it's just gonna keep pulling you.
Yeah. So, be careful.
Rest in peace.
Yeah, rest in peace to him. That's sad. Browns unlikely to pursue DeAndre Hopkins. Panthers is more pressing needs than DeAndre Hopkins. Is there's really not a lot developing around him right now.
It's kind of sad, like not much is developing around him compared to like what OBJ got. So you think like with Odell Beckham that, you know, he would be this one and DeAndre Hopkins would be the one already signed on a team.
Yeah, you'd think, but it was also, you know, kind of let go late after free agency and the draft had played out. So you're kind of in this lull right now where, you know, he could also be doing what Cook is and just kind of slow playing it as well.
Yeah, that could be. Just waiting for that right opportunity to hit, like especially with some camp casualty or something.
Yeah. Treylon Burks playing at a different speed in off-season workouts and practices. He's noticeably leaner. It's usually good when somebody's had a series of leg injuries that, yeah, they drop weight because it takes a lot of pressure off of that. You know, Burks, raw talent, athletic talent, probably the closest thing to, as much as anybody wants to wish cast people as Debo, Burks is probably the closest thing to Debo from a skill set standpoint. Never really got going last season after a tough offseason. but the Titans didn't really do anything either. So this is kind of the same thing like with the Patriots. You don't expect them to throw a lot. You don't expect the offense to be very good, but there's like, in this case, one guy in Treylon Burks and not anything else.
Yeah, it's like Chigakwaku. And he's moving up in drafts also now, where he's not in that sleeper territory anymore.
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, Burks, I mean, this is kind of what we expected from Burks, like to have that bounce back, like, not the bounce back, but this is the type of season we were expecting last year from Burks. But once he had all the asthma and everything, issues like that, he kind of fell off. So a lot of people dropped him in their rankings and everything, but he's moving back up in mine for sure.
Yeah, right now his ADP is the 8th round, right ahead of Mooney and Bateman. Bateman in that same boat. Tony shortly behind them. So, you know, he's right now about the right tier. But you're also, this is being recorded on June 29th. It's mostly hardcore people drafting. So he's somebody whose ADP you want to watch as, you know, more casual fans start to mock draft.
That's probably a lot more of a best ball ADP than anything.
Yeah. Gardner Minshew has a chance to start week one. No duh. He probably should, in my opinion.
You don't just throw Anthony Richardson out into the fire?
I don't think so.
Even with the kind of legs and everything he's got, the legs, the cannon, no. See what he has. I mean, if you're going to tank, you might as well tank again, right?
Yeah, but you don't want that to affect his psyche too, right? That's kind of the argument with young quarterbacks is if you're going to tank, you know, don't feed him to the fire and get him lit up week one, given, you know, mentality depending, but you can ruin a quarterback that way. So let Minshew start, let him learn a little bit. They flounder, then let Richardson come in, get some experience, play. He's a development prospect. I know they spent high draft capital on him, but it doesn't change what the player is, and it's a development prospect with a ton of raw talent. You don't feed him to the wolves, you know, week one and potentially have that go south on you really, really quick, my opinion. And that, if you've been listening for a while, that's not any different than what I've said about, you know, other guys like Malik Willis and some of these other guys that were, you know, athletic darlings that, you know, just didn't. Hell, even Patrick Mahomes, when he came in, was the same thing for me.
Yeah, he sat down for a whole year.
Yep.
He came out week 17, but I don't know. I mean, he spent top five draft capital. I mean, yeah, he's not no Trey Lance, but look at Trey Lance now, where he's actually QB3 on his own team.
Yeah. Well, Trey Lance is another one that I don't think that they should have done that with, and injuries was standing, right? But I think they're making a mistake if Richardson starts week one.
If you like the tangibles, man, I think you throw him in there. See what he can do.
If you like the tangibles, I think you don't throw him in there yet. You let some of the other stuff develop around that before you throw him in there. Devin Achane may not be long before he has a prominent role. I mean, yeah, he should. He should be involved in the receiving game and involved in space early.
I've been all over the Devin Achane, man.
Yeah, team that wants to be explosive with a bunch of old guys around him. Absolutely. Brock Purdy is headed to Jacksonville to start a throwing program. Pierre Strong could compliment Ramondre Stevenson. I'm here for this. Pierre Strong could be the lightning to Ramondre's thunder, and I am here for all of the Pierre Strong hype.
I love Pierre Strong.
I love Pierre Strong coming out last year. I thought he was a James White type player. He's super athletic. He's a smaller back with good receiving ability. Rushed for 4,500 yards and 40 touchdowns at South Dakota State. Over 500 receiving yards, which is a lot in college. You know, I don't know that he's going to take a lot away from Stevenson as a receiver. I am here for the Pierre Strong hype, and this is something you absolutely should pay attention to, given how the Patriots have ran their offense in the past, given the fact that there's not wide receiver depth there, and given the fact that he can be a dynamic player and Damian Harris is gone. They never run just one back. things to not pay attention to. The Jets really do believe in Israel Abanaconda's ability to contribute right away. Contributing can mean a lot of things. Special teams, for example.
Yeah, and plus, like with Izzy too, it kind of makes you wonder, like, how slow are they gonna bring back Breece Hall?
I don't think that that has anything to do with Breece Hall. I think that they're talking Izzy to talk Izzy. It's the off season, and you see hype around rookies all the time. That's why they felt like they could pass on somebody like Dalvin Cook. But it also goes on to say as quick as path to playing time is dependent on Breece Hall missing time to start the season. But he could end up over Zonovan Knight or Michael Carter. So there's really no direct mention of this having a direct correlation to Breece Hall so much as it is just hype and Abanaconda because they asked.
Okay.
So it's not like they asked about Breece Hall and then they brought up Izzy in the answer to the question. It was a question about Izzy directly based on the context. So that changes it. If it was in the context of them, and this is an important thing for coach speak, right? Context. We've talked about it a couple times around, you know, when you hear somebody's like contributing or the best in the room at something or whatever. Context is important. If a coach is being asked about a player, they're not going to openly dog their player. Right?
Right.
So their player comes up when a coach is asked about another player, then there's a little bit to read into there. Players come up when a coach is asked about a position group, there's a little bit to read into there.
But Ooh, Nathan Sutter says, sounds like that, like a bet is brewing between us on here on YouTube.
On what? Whether, I mean, based on week one starters, I could get behind that. Based on Breece being ready or based on Richardson or Minshew?
I'm guessing it's going to be Richardson and Minshew because we were going back and forth. I think it's going to be Richardson starting week one.
I think Minshew starts week one. I will take that bet and I will Venmo you for a 4-pack of beer if I'm wrong.
Okay.
And vice versa. We'll buy your show beer. You buy my show beer if we're wrong.
That sounds good. I'm down.
I'm good with that. See Frank Ragnow, not expecting 100%. We're only going to go usually keep this time. We'll do about 5 more minutes of these or before I'm bored. DeAndre Hopkins is trying to get more teams interested after visits. That again, I'm really surprised at how unslow that's folding.
I really think it's got to be money. Like, he must be chasing a lot of money and want a lot of like guaranteed. Like, if OBJ's getting 15 to 18, he still must be wanting the 20, which is what he was making in Arizona.
Yeah, and maybe teams just know that, which is why this is a slow burn. You're onto something. That's the only thing I can really think of is that maybe they just know that, and that's why it's a slow burn.
See, I mean, maybe he'll eventually get the money he wants, or there's going to be something that's going to be heavily incentive bonus for him to hit that money.
Some other things on some, we'll just quick hit these and some lower end guys. Tutu Atwell will have a role in the team's passing offense this season. Now, the Rams are interesting also at their wide receiver group because outside of Cooper Kupp, they also don't really have anything. You got Van Jefferson, who hasn't gone on. Vince Kronik is a starter right now. And then you've got small guys in Atwell and Puka Nacua, and then DeMarcus Robinson, also a smaller guy. I mean, the Rams are another team where if you really believe in somebody, somebody should emerge. I don't believe in Tutu Atwell. But
I mean, what is he, like 4'5"?
Opportunity, yeah, something like that.
He's, I think, tiny. My son's taller than him.
He's athletic, but he's tiny. Some other things, Justin Ross projected as the final man out on the Chiefs 53-man roster. That's an athletic projection. We don't really read too much into that, especially before any camp starts. See, some Jalen Naylor hype, which is things nobody wants. Romeo Dobbs said Jordan Love can do the exact same thing as Aaron Rodgers, in like the buffet line, in the cafeteria, in terms of psychedelics.
I think he could say, you know, hike. I think he can throw the ball the same way. He could toss to the running backs. He can hand up the running backs. Maybe that's what he meant, but I don't know about his accuracy yet.
So I'm going to read this whole quote. Dobbs continued his acclaim for Love, saying you didn't see the difference between him and Rodgers. Packers corner Jair Alexander called him the best quarterback in the league. This is a team trying to hype up their QB.
Yeah, it's about maybe the best quarterback in Wisconsin right now.
Right. But just a team trying to hype up their QB. That's all. Torn ACL in minicamp for one of the Jets safeties. Chargers being pressed against Tyreek Hill formally. I think we talked about that earlier in the week. So it's assault and battery charges for Hill. Just like with Kamara, right? We can see this take a year or two to play out before anything comes of it.
And so, speaking of Kamara, we should be hearing that news like anytime, like soon.
You would think, seems like probably closer to camp, but yeah, although we're not that far off of camp. Sam Darnold, edge going into camp over Trey Lance. Okay, sure.
As a QB too?
Yeah, maybe. Well, Purdy is just starting a throwing program, so he might not be ready yet.
So Sam Darnold, QB one season coming along.
Yeah, who knows? Who the hell knows? Shanahan's a wizard. I don't know how he does what he does.
Because, I mean, he's being drafted probably as, I'm talking Sam Darnold as like QB 32 plus in draft. Mm-hmm. So to get him there and then say like he finishes, like he actually starts, he does the whole season and finishes like a top 12 QB somewhere, that would be nuts.
Yeah.
We get to see the Sam Darnold that we know everyone was hoping to see when he was drafted by the Jets.
Yeah. All right. I think that's it for hype. Sony Michel signed back with the Rams, by the way. Isaiah Hodgins is running with the first teamers of the Giants, another team with an open wide receiver room. Amon-Ra St. Brown going to be used more downfield as a pass catcher. We'll see. Not really his game.
No.
All right. Let's go ahead and talk beer again, and then we'll hit some strategies here. We're about 30 minutes in on what should be an hour to an hour and 20 minute episode, so I don't think we're too early for that.
Beer review.
All right. You want to go ahead and start?
Yeah, so I had Brew Detroit's Cerveza Del Rey, which is a Mexican-style lager. And just like most Mexican-style beers, like you say, like your Coronas, your Pacificos, it's that light type of beer where you could drink it all day type of beer. And I don't taste any difference really compared to any other type of Mexican lagers I've had. So, but definitely for the price, because I think I only paid like $6 for this 4-pack. It's definitely well worth it for the pints.
All right. So I told you I'd go into a little bit about what I've noticed from now. This is my third different brewery with the non-alcoholics. And the biggest difference I noticed between non-alcoholics and regular beers that is not unique to this beer is that the body isn't quite right. That's the one thing I do notice. And one of the methodologies calls for, you know, using second pass through grains. Some calls for using super expensive vacuum systems. Some call for, you know, doing some different things with your mash. But, you know, all of those things will contribute to a lighter bodied beer. And that's kind of where this is at. Most of them are almost like the body of a seltzer. So if you think of a stout being like kind of creamy and full, you think of a traditional American lager, like or American light lager, like a Bud Light or a Coors Light, you're a step lighter than even those, or a step lighter than your ultra lights, like, you know, Mick Ultra, right? You're kind of in that realm. So the mouthfeel on most of these is super light, and I have not yet found one that maintains the mouthfeel to style ratio that I would expect out of, an alcoholic beer. So for a West Coast IPA, I'd expect, a medium to medium light body, where this is definitely more light. I'd expect a little bit more caramel malt to it, to support some of the, piney and somewhat juicy hops. You don't really get that. The other thing that I've noticed about this IPA, and again, I don't know if this is a process or not, is that the hop flavor is pretty unrefined. So if you've ever opened just a bag of hops and smell them, it's a pretty unrefined flavor. Most of the hop flavor you get in beer comes from oil extraction. And it's hard to explain unless you smelt that. But when I pour this in the glass, the first thing I get is just a blast of unrefined hops. After that, it does open up into more of into some tropical notes, but they don't show up throughout the beer like I'd expect in a normal West Coast IPA either. All that being said, it's not a bad beer. The hoppier non-alcoholics definitely have more flavor than what some of just the more malt-focused ones have had. It's still very, very drinkable. It's not unpleasant to drink at all. But, if you go into this expecting it to be a replica of an alcoholic West Coast IPA, that's not what you're getting. It's going to be lighter. The hop character is going to be less refined. The body isn't going to be there, and the malt support isn't necessarily going to be there. But that doesn't mean it's bad. It's just, it's different.
That's better than my explanation.
It's like diet beer.
I mean, because that's what I would say. It's light beer, it tastes like diet beer. And then, like, you actually have, like, an actual full body, and people are like, oh, okay, I might try that. I might not try that.
Yeah, and it's definitely a lighter body. That's just my takeaways. I've had this one. I've had an Oktoberfest, and then I've had an English Golden Ale or a Pub Ale in the non-alcoholic variety. So I've done Amber. I've done, I haven't done Stouts yet, but I've done kind of the other three realms of things across different breweries. So we're going to keep drinking. I'm going to keep rotating and see if I can find anything that changes that. If there's something that someone that does, nail the mouthfeel, but, so far in the craft realm, that just hasn't been the case. All right, let's talk strategy. So first off, you wanted to start off by talking the rookie draft we just did, right?
Yeah.
In the listener league. So for those that don't know, we started a listener league in 2017. We took it dynasty. It's been largely unchanged since then. Other, we moved platforms and there's been a couple people that have left and we brought in replacements, but the format's been largely unchanged. It's a 16 team, two tight end, super flex league. So things get pretty, pretty deep, and I'll leave it to you. Like, you want, however you want to go ahead and slice and dice this particular type of draft and strategy. So rookie team, call it rookie draft larger than 12 teams.
Larger than life, we can basically call it. Because It is insanely nuts, and it can move super fast. And if you're not paying attention, like I was on the road for some of the draft picks, so I didn't have time to like try to jump trades in, but the guys were just picking, and I'm like, man, like I had the 101. So obviously for me, being the worst team, I decided to go with Bijan Robinson over Anthony Richardson, even though I've been kind of hyping Anthony Richardson in super flex leagues. I just see the value for Bijan Robinson kind of being the better value where I can get more out of him. I feel like now, like if he is to explode, I can get more draft capital for myself for the next year and maybe a few years ahead. So that's the reason why I took him over Anthony Richardson, who could actually be a bust in general. So the safety of going Bijan over Anthony Richardson was the reason why I went that way. But like, yeah, what I was trying to do, oh, sorry, go ahead.
No, go ahead. I'll let you finish. I was just going to rip off of what you were saying.
So like, the first two picks go ahead, and I didn't realize the guy who had the 102 was even willing to trade out that pick. So by the time I got to look at it, the trade already went through. So I was kind of like, oh man, I could have had Bijan Robinson and Anthony Richardson as a possibility because I had the draft capital to actually move up and try to do something like that.
Yeah, so the safety, first off, in a rookie draft that deep is a big thing. As you mentioned, you can't miss. There's no waiver wire, right? There's hardly anybody on the waiver wire. And, you know, with it being a 16-team league, it's still a four-round draft, but everything's moved up around, basically. So, you know, you figure you most four-round drafts, you're taking guys you like in the fourth round that aren't necessarily consensus, and your dart throws in the third round, well, all that's moved up. So by the time you get to the third and fourth round in these drafts, you're just fucking drafting people. Like, okay, there's an inkling here. There's a little opportunity here. There is no safety beyond, you know, even the back end of the first round. So, you help the value a little bit with the tight end premium and the two tight end league and the two quarterback league, but you're still, in most years, by the end of the first round, if not the very early part of the second, out of any type of safety measure. And you can't build through, you're not going to find, there's maybe one a year. You're not really going to find anybody on the waiver wire that's going to give you any type of consistent, sustained performance. So the only other option is to trade, and everybody wants draft capital or usable players. And because of the depth of the league, you have no surplus of either. So,
yeah.
It's super important to hit on those draft picks. So yeah, a little bit safer route there, which is perfectly okay, in this type of league, but also given positional scarcity, running back position scarcity is still short. And this is a deep enough league to where you get into a situation where you could be starting, you know, running backs in a super flex spot because there's nothing extra at quarterback. If you have every team starting quarterback is rostered, most backups are rostered. You're at third stringers before you're on the waiver wire.
Not even third stringers are on the waiver wire anymore. They're all pretty much gone.
Yeah. So, you know, you've really got to be on it. But you don't have depth to trade from. You don't really have a lot to work with. So, yeah, safety, there's the way to go. And if you're like me, you just don't have draft picks. And, you know, that's not normal. I had a first and a fourth rounder. It's like, all right, cool. We got the 113 and we're picking somewhere in the fourth and you're not going to do a lot. So it's like your team age is out. You're just aged out. And it's harder to get that back to prominence.
Exactly. Like a lot of people will say, you know, it takes 1 to 2 years to rebuild your team. These ones are like 3 to 4 years, I feel like.
If you don't miss
the right path. Exactly.
Mm-hmm.
Because, I mean, we're starting a quarterback, two running backs, three wide receivers, a tight end, two flexes with a wide receiver, running back, tight end, and then a super flex.
Yeah.
So that's a lot to do between 16 teams. So you have a lot of no-name players sometimes. They're actually starting. Like, I was actually starting at one point Ray McLeod last year. That's how bad my team was.
Plus IRs and taxi squads. I mean, that's – we're all starting somebody we're not proud of in that league. Mm-hmm. That league's deep enough for me to pick up Matt Schaub as a joke.
I mean, I'm actually happy to have Bijan Robinson because now I have a starting running back because I had no running backs.
Right. And there's a lot of people that are in that boat. So, yeah, that certainly makes sense, and that goes into knowing your league settings and knowing your depth, especially with – you know, with rookie drafts, knowing structures. We've talked a lot about rebuilds, things like that. So let's shift gears here and talk scoring for a second, which is going to loosely tie to Scott Fishbowl. I know you didn't get invited, but yeah.
Still waiting.
You know, let's talk that for a second. So this is another way you can kind of flip your draft upside down. That's to tweak with scoring settings to give players inherently more or inherently less value. And, you know, this is something that they do with through points per first down. It's something that they do with kickers by using a decimal kicker scoring system, which is basically based on field goal yardage. It's something that they do with quarterbacks by rewarding consistency. And we haven't seen full rules in scoring yet this year, but it's something that they do by as traditionally by rewarding consistency and penalizing interceptions. So you have to know your scoring settings. You know, we talk a lot about, you know, PPR versus half PPR, which used to be as exciting as things got, right? And, you know, your standard leagues would reward touchdowns more, and your PPR leagues would reward consistency and, you know, some of these third down guys and high volume more. When you get into scoring settings, you know, if you got are going to get highly penalized for interceptions, guess what? Josh Allen's value is suddenly down, right?
Right.
You know, the Dak Prescott's value is suddenly down. You know, there are going to be guys that fall down or that come up across your board. You know, there's going to be any, if you have tight end premium, tight ends are going to artificially inflate there. You're going to see your guys like Kelsey, maybe up in the second and third round, even ahead of some, you know, guys that might be top 10, 11 wide receivers. You're going to see some of these mid-tier tight ends come up into the single-digit rounds. So I'll stop there and let you play off scoring settings for a little bit.
The playoff scorings for Scott Fish?
Not even Scott Fish, just in general, like how strategy changes for like tight end premium or super negative quarterback points, or, you know, point per first down, point per big play, some of the different variabilities we see showing up in leagues now that maybe weren't there 5-6 years ago.
Yeah, so like definitely like the tight end premium one is definitely the biggest one I always see. And like to get ready for like the playoffs, like I sometimes I'll look back at stats, and like because I like to be sometimes be like a stat geek, and I'll try to understand what each player was doing. So it's like, yeah, you know, he might be the QB one, but you know, how is he during this type of going against this kind of defense? So, like I kind of like try to like play like devil's advocate to try to play it safe, but also at the same time, I also like to come in like a little risky. So like, yeah, you're not gonna bench like your Josh Allen's, your Patrick Mahomes, but it's like, you know, I'm more looking at like do you play Dak Prescott or do you look at Kirk Cousins as a 1 o'clock gamer, or is he going to show up as a 4 o'clock gamer? And you know, like running backs, you know, like how's that defense look like compared to other defense? You know, how's it? Just not how has it been during the season? Because to me, the season can kind of look bad, but kind of like I usually like to look back like 3 weeks to see how that defense has done against running backs, and kind of says like, okay, you know, I'm going to start this running back, take that chance with this guy over this guy, even though you know, like. Other sites will say, you know, you should start him over him. I'll sometimes flip-flop it and start the other player. And sometimes I've actually benefited, but I've also had to kick me in the face too. Mm-hmm. So you got to be like very risk-averse and willing to take that chance.
Sure. What about best ball? You said risk-averse, willing to take that chance, and that fits best ball pretty nicely. Let's talk best ball for a second.
Best ball, I'm all about risk. So like I just look for high risk, high rewards. It's like Gabe Davis is a must draft. Like I always look to find him in every draft just because, yeah, he'll give you that 2-point game, but also at the same time, he'll have that 50-point game. Or you look at Derrick Henry. He's like a freaking, he's just that bell cow back who you know is always going to get a lot of points. But like another thing I look at too for best ball with quarterbacks is I don't always go after the elite quarterback. Sometimes I'll just back end stack three if I can that are like top 13 to 20. I'll try to just stack that.
Some of those guys just, that might have like week to week flex potential because you don't got to worry about guessing who to start in best ball. It's week to week flex, and you know you don't have to be concerned with who it's going to be. You just know maybe that one of those guys is going to finish as a QB1 most weeks.
Right, and like same with tight ends. Like if I don't get Kelsey or Andrews, that's when I just don't even try to draft one. I try to just wait as long as I can to the back end of the draft and just stack more of those at the end. I don't try to go for the middle. I just wait till the end.
Right. Yeah. And with wide receivers, so traditionally I'm risk averse when it comes to guys that are boom bust, except for best ball. Best ball is the exception to that rule. You mentioned Gabe Davis. You want guys that can go boom because you don't have to worry about when they're going to go boom. If they don't go boom, then you have a couple consistent guys on your roster that they're just going to plug in below that. But you have to have some boom on your team, right? Because what best ball is designed to do is it will prevent the 35-point person on your bench because they're boom bust and you thought they had a bad matchup and then they blew up. You know, it's a good way to mock draft, get yourself in a bunch of best ball leagues that are actually competitive. But they're really a lot of fun. And for those that aren't familiar, the best ball league style is you draft your team, you draft your rosters, you don't set lineups after that. It just, it plays out how it plays out. There are roster spots, but it will essentially set your optimal lineup every week based on your roster spots. So that's why, like, you know, Ryan said, you almost tight end by committee, quarterback by committee, because you don't need, you know, like in a traditional league resetting lineups, is the same guy to be it every week, right? It can be, you know, or consistency to where you don't have to think about your quarterback, because you don't want to have to think about your quarterback.
No. And usually, like one thing I usually do as a must is I usually draft, I usually target running backs. Like, that's my biggest thing that I always go after, is the running back position.
Yeah.
Just because it's so injury riddle.
Yeah. And you can find value later if you're just looking for guys to go off, but the running back position, injury riddled, but, you know, also, again, there's always a chance on any given week, right? Any given Sunday.
Any given Sunday.
Someone to go off. Like, if you're risk averse, best balls, best balls, not where you want to be, because best ball, you do need to be more risky. You do need to draft better. Flip side, we talked super big leagues, we talked best ball. Let's talk a little bit about small leagues. These guys that are in 8-man leagues and how that strategy differs, because those exist too, right? Don't got enough people trying to do a work league, a family league, whatever. You know, let's talk first off roster settings for an 8-man league, and then a bit about how you're going to draft differently for that.
So, like an 8-man league, usually you start extending the rosters. Like, I've done it where it was 2 quarterback and a super flex, just because of it being 8-man. And then also, instead of 2 running backs, it was 3 running backs. 3 wide receiver went to 4 wide receivers. It was 2 tight ends. So kind of built it where you actually had to use a lot of strategy based on how you wanted to build your team. But the best strategy I like to use is how is your team falling together? Because of that kind of league, like, basically you're looking at everyone to have top-end teams. So when you build that top end team, how do you want it to look? Like, are you just going to let it fall to you as is and say, like, you know what, as is is falling, like, I got AJ Brown, I got Stephon Diggs as my wide receiver, you know, do I go another wide receiver here, or do I just go start attacking quarterbacks or another wide or tight end, you know, do I get Kyle Pitts here? But usually, like, I mean, especially when it's like a super flex with 2 quarterbacks, usually the quarterbacks once again go first 2 rounds. So that'd be 16 quarterbacks off. You could say probably about 12 would be off, because a lot of people will still go top running backs, top wide receivers. So based off that, you kind of have to start building that strategy off of that point based on where you're drafting, what falls to you.
Yeah. For me, small leagues is just best. It's pretty much I'm playing best available at that point. Give me the best possible team. We'll figure it out later. Something doesn't freaking work out, the waiver wire is there, and it should be there. If you don't go super deep on your rosters, especially, that's kind of the anti big team, right? The anti big team. You gotta, you know, strategize and build big team. You're strategizing. You're building. You're being more careful with that. And in smaller leagues, just go for it, because there are things that you can switch out. If you fuck up, you fuck up. So the only other thing I want to talk about is IDP league. And this is something not a lot of people do IDP. But more people are starting to dip their toes in. Like, we're going to have one IDP player. We'll have one IDP player at each tier of the defense. Some doing full IDP. So, you know, the thing I've seen people struggle with that is, when do I start drafting defensive players? So kind of, strategy-wise, IDP, what type of players are you going for, and when are you looking to get in on some of those guys? And let's just assume, for the sake of argument, you're at point per solo tackle, half point for assisted tackle, and, you know, you've got, you know, 2 to 3 points on sacks and interceptions and forced fumbles and your normal bonuses there that go with touchdowns and whatnot.
a lot of times during IP leagues, I'm in a couple IDPs that, especially like redraft, I'm in a redraft league that happens over the summer. And I see defense players start going in the fifth round at the earliest. Fifth, sixth rounds when they start coming off the board. Me, on the other hand, I don't really do that. I tend to stack up on offensive players and let the defensive players follow me around the end. How do you like to do that, Hopper? Do you do the same way, or do you kind of just try to piece it together? Because, I mean, it's hard to, like, strategize IDP because, yeah, they were really good last year, but can they repeat it again this year?
There's the only guys that – so I'll wait until we get to the late single-digit to early double-digit rounds most of the time, and then what I'm looking at first and foremost is I want – to build some consistency. So when you're doing point per tackle or half point per tackle, there are some linebackers out there, some safeties out there that consistently year in, year out have high tackle numbers, which are going to give you consistent points. And then you're going to have, you know, some superstar defensive ends where they're going to get their sacks. But most of the time you're going to be waiting until your later rounds till, you know, you're at least got your starters filled out and maybe a couple positions deep on your bench with your offensive players before you flip to defensive players. And, you know, part of the reason for that is that, you know, like, there's not a lot of consistency in a lot of IDP tiers, right? If you're rewarding tackles, then some of your box safeties are going to be consistent and some of your middle of the field linebackers are going to be consistent. You know, you'll maybe have some consistent single-digit performances out of a D tackle, but there's not a lot of variability between those. And it's going to be a crapshoot on your defensive backs and your edge rushers. You know, again, there's some edge rushers that are pretty consistent, but you get to that mid-tier, it's almost like tight end, right? You got a couple guys that are going to be super consistent, and then you know,
everyone else.
And, you know, any edge can blow up and wreck a game for you. If they have a good 3-4 sack performance, that's going to be huge for you. But most of the time, there's not going to be a lot of variability there. And I think the other thing that ducks common convention, shut down cornerbacks are not good for IDP. That's another strategy piece there. Shut down cornerbacks you do not want to go with because they're not targeted. No. And IDP and fantasy in general is all stats based. So, you know, I'm not aware of a platform that, you know, rewards somebody for not being targeted or starts a baseline and then subtracts from it every time somebody is targeted, right? And, you know, some of these lockdown, like a Sauce Gardner or, a Pat Surtain or some of these guys that, you know, Jair Alexander, that quarterbacks just don't want to throw on. You're not going to get a lot out of guys like that because they're not going to have an opportunity to make plays. They're not going to have an opportunity to get picks or to make tackles. You're going to get more out of the guy on the other side of the field that's getting targeted all the time and is going to come away from that game with 6 or 7 tackles than you are the guy that's not getting targeted, not giving anything up. And that bucks conventional NFL wisdom.
Yeah, usually when it comes to like cornerbacks, I usually try to like target like the rookie ones because no quarterback knows how they're going to play until they actually start playing them. Then that second year, that's when they really like take off. Like Singletary last year on the Texans, he was awesome for IDP leagues. But you know, this year it could be a whole different story. And then we got a question too from Nathan.
All right,
he says I have a 12-team PPR keeper league. You can keep up to 3 players, but they take 2 draft spots higher if you keep them. So if you draft them in the 14th, they're up to the 12th and so on and so forth.
Sure. I like that type of style, by the way.
Who are some must-have rookies to target? And what he's looking at are players he can get in later rounds because they do 18 rounds total that he can stash for the next year or so.
Okay, so you're kind of looking for like development, the guy that maybe doesn't even need to break out this year, but you know, you might get in double digit rounds next year, and then they're a value, guys like that.
Yeah. You don't expect them to break out like right now, but they're going to be like, see, like, you know, he drafts him at 17 and now next year he goes up to like 10.
Yeah. So I haven't looked at what the ADP is for a lot of these guys in redraft. So I'll preface it with that. But some guys that come to mind here are going to be guys like a Quentin Johnston who, you know, there's a lot of upside there. There's a lot of upside there. He's kind of raw. He's going to need to develop a little bit. And you assume he's going to be behind Keenan Allen and Mike Williams' rookie year, with a chance to kind of usurp that. To a lesser degree, I don't know where JSN's going to end up, but if he were to fall into that range, because people are worried about a Geno repeat performance or where he lands on that team, you know, that's another guy that, you know, you look at Lockett plus 30, that, you know, is going to be a lot bigger in year two probably than year one, just like Johnston is. Tight ends are going to be another place to do this. Dalton Kincaid's a guy that, you know, I think a lot of us believe has some Travis Kelce type upside in his game, but, you know, and tight ends are going to be artificially lower on the totem pole anyway as far as drafting goes. He's also going to have Dawson Knox there year one, but I think we fully expect him to break out, potentially have, you know, elite levels of contribution in year two or year three. I'll let you name a couple here, Ryan, if you want, as I continue to think through some of these.
Yeah, like another one I like it's kind of hard to say because he's not really late round, but I'm going to say Roschon Johnson just because of that backfield for Chicago.
Yeah, there's nothing safe long term. So
yeah,
I get why you're saying it.
Like, you know, there's something back there that we really like, but it's just like Roschon could be the one that could pop. And with as late as he's going right now, he would be one I would be willing to take.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of people are high on Tank Bigsby and they think Etienne's going to kind of collapse. I don't see that happening. I see that kind of just being better depth because of what they had behind him before. Yeah. It wasn't really anything that I thought was actually like going to hurt his value. So like actually having him, I thought benefited him. But one I do really like still is like the Izzy Abanikanda, just because with the Hackett offense coming in, I can see like the Aaron Jones being played by Breece Hall, while Abanikanda kind of plays that thumper of AJ Dillon. And he's going super late right now. He's in 221 right now, so he's basically free.
What did you say the format for this was? Is it Superflex or no?
Sorry. He just said 12-team PPR.
Okay.
He didn't say Superflex or anything.
Okay, because rookie quarterbacks are an interesting one, and one quarterback leads to like a guy like Richardson with a lot of running upside that, you know, you could take a flyer on probably literally at the very end of the draft, or, you know, even a CJ Stroud who, you know, might suffer a bit from the team not being around him. But I'll steer away from that. Another guy I want to mention as you went to running backs is Kendre Miller with the Saints. I really, really like his profile. You know, with Kamara there and the suspension not coming down yet, you know, I think that they've also got Jamal Williams there. He may not get a chance to really show a ton this year other than in flashes, but he's a guy that coming into next year, I think could catch on kind of in the same vein of Roschon Johnson with the Bears. So I like him. And then if you want to go real, real deep, Chase Brown with the Bengals. They tried to get out of Mixon this year, didn't do it. There's almost no way they bring him back. He has a skill set, and a tradition as a workhorse, that could see him in a similar position to what Rashad White is right now.
I like that one a lot. Another one I like too, and this is super deep, and this is kind of like thinking hard into it, is Rashee Rice, you know, Kansas City wide receiver, just because we don't know what the Kansas City wide receiver core looks like. You know, I'll say it's Travis Kelce, and that's all we really care about. And then just Patrick Mahomes has a lot of receivers he uses. But with Mecole Hardman gone, you have MVS, who I still love there, but you don't have a true, like, ballpoint kind of, like, middle-of-the-field type of catcher outside of Kelce. So I think Rashee Rice is actually a good pick there. And he's going to, like, 181 overall, so he's another late-round pick.
Mm-hmm.
And then if you even want to go deeper than that, I'm not a fan of him, but the Devy community always was. And this would be someone I wouldn't add him or anything. I just kind of put him on my watch list, just see what happens. And that's Kayshon Boutte. And that's if he can get his head on straight. You know, he could pop and be that wide receiver, or he could just be nothing.
He's a guy that you might even be able to, if you start to see like snap percentage go up or something like that midseason, you grab him. I don't know how that works for keepers, if it's a situation where you have to have them on your roster at the beginning of the season or not, or if they just, you know, elevate them to your last round pick, or if there's some that should be defined in your bylaws if it isn't. But you know, how that's going to work. And I'd be interested to come back to this question as we get closer to redraft season, and as those ADPs start to fall in, to see if there's anybody that's not a rookie that I would look at there and say, okay, you know, maybe this guy I could see having a breakout season and then outperforming that, or a guy that you know is going to miss some time and be artificially deflated that might not be drafted, like a Jameson Williams, for example.
Yeah.
So, or a John Mechie, or, you know, guys in that regard, some of these sophomore and junior players that might actually have an opportunity to break out and then elevate. I'm interested to see where they land as we get closer to redraft this year and try to strategize that way. So, good question. And I think we'll come back to that one here in a month or so.
Yeah, that one's an interesting one. I actually like that one a lot.
All right. Anything else?
I think we pretty much covered it all.
I think we did pretty much cover it all. Thank you guys for tuning in. As a reminder, Dan not with us tonight. Internet issues for him, given some storms and stuff. So we fully expect him to be back next week. I am your host at Beerfield Hop with two P's, Chris Hopper, at Ryan Miner _ FFB. Find his writing on FFFaceoff.com and apparently Reddit, where he's getting drug, but
as always,
yeah, as always, but ffaceoff.com there to find all of his articles. At Beerfield for the show, tweet us, drop a line, whatever. Beerfield podcast on YouTube, and we'll be back next week. We're gonna try to get a dynasty startup mock draft in at least the first 7 to 10 rounds of one, so once all three of us can be back at the same time. So till then,
it'll be fun.
Cheers. Stay safe. Have a safe holiday weekend. Don't drink and drive. Drink responsibly. Use fireworks responsibly. Keep all your digits. You don't need anybody pulling a JPP this weekend.
No, thank you.
Later.
Have a good one, guys.
All right.
That was quick. But it didn't seem quick. Like, it seemed like it was actually like.